Root, and a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dha min ba'din, wallahu samiyun alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration, accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne, and the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance, and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's foreign minister says the UN Security Council's inaction on Israel's attack on the Islamic Republic's embassy in Syria prompted Tehran to launch its punitive action against the regime. Israel's indiscriminate strikes claim more Palestinian lives in Gaza, as the death toll from the regime's genocide tops 34,000, mostly women and children. And Islamic resistance in Iraq says it has launched a new drone attack against Israel, hitting a vital target in the occupied Golan Heights. Well, welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is Mies. Thanks for joining us. Iran's foreign minister says the UN Security Council's inaction on Israel's attack on the Islamic Republic's embassy in Syria prompted Tehran to launch its punitive action against the regime. Hossein Amir Abdollahian was speaking in a phone conversation with his South African counterpart, Naledi Pandor. The Iranian minister reiterated Iran's position that it is not after the expansion of the conflict in the region, but it will give a forceful response to any mistake by Israel. Regarding South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the ICJ, Amir Abdollahian hailed it as a historic initiative. Pandor, for her part, stressed the need for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Mohamed Ali Araki is a journalist and political analyst who joins us. Welcome to the program. There have been widespread support for what the operation retaliatory in nature of Iran towards the Israeli regime. And this was although for the attack by the Israeli regime on Iran's consulate in Syria, but it inflicted damage to the regime that's executing a genocidal war in the Gaza Strip. Therefore, you have this widespread support. And, of course, South Africa is one of the countries that's united with Iran on this issue. How effective was that retaliatory action by Iran when it comes to the genocide that's happening in the Gaza Strip and having more countries united against the Israeli regime?
Yes, so the retaliation that the Islamic Republic of Iran implemented just a few days ago, the support that Iran gained for this, it was built over time. This was built over time, and the international world now completely supports the Islamic Republic of Iran. They have seen that it is possible to bring an apartheid terrorist regime down to its knees, just as the Islamic Republic of Iran did. And the apartheid regime of Israel did not expect the Islamic Republic of Iran to retaliate the way that they did. It was a complete surprise to them. This is based on their own confessions. The Israeli officials said this themselves. And so this is very important because the apartheid regime of Israel no longer has its previous support, its previous position in the international world. We can realize this through many different examples that are ongoing, from the case that South Africa took to ICJ, where the Israeli apartheid regime of the Israeli apartheid regime has never been taken to the international court in the way that it was taken to by South Africa. The second point was recently the the foreign minister of Germany was in some conversation with Netanyahu, and she pointed out to the famine that is ongoing in the Gaza Strip, and basically she was demanding that this should end, that this is sliding into a complete famine, and it's not right. This is all available on obviously social media and the news outlets, and the reaction that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of the apartheid regime, had towards what she said was that he first brought some fake photos up, and then further on he claimed that we are not, he became very angry and he claimed and he said that we are not like the Nazis, to fake photos and publish them. He was talking about the Holocaust. That's if we believe that it's correct. Anyway, so this shows that even Germany, that was previously one of the most important allies of the apartheid terrorist regime of Israel, it no longer stands with Israel the way that it used to before. For a prime minister, for a foreign minister in that political level to come out and to react to the terrorist regime of Israel, this shows the gradual downfall and the crippling of the Israeli regime, the of their power. And this is a great achievement. And further on, I'd like to mention that the retaliation that occurred, that the Islamic Republic of Iran implemented, it will be replied with any, if Israel makes any mistake, there will be harsh responses. Again, responses that Israel did not expect.
Well, there's been a breakdown when it comes to some different dynamics that are involved when it comes to the whole issue of this genocidal war. First of all, we are having the Security Council, though not related, but indirectly it is, not condemn the Israeli attack when it came to Iran's consulate. You then have the way that this genocidal war is turning against the Israeli regime. And as a result, you're having many countries look at the way that Iran has supported the Palestinian cause, along with the axis of resistance groups and countries in the region. So the tables are being turned in that respect for countries that maybe have doubted the Iran's actions when it comes to Palestine, but now they are united behind it, all for the cause of Palestine. This whole issue of Palestine is really impacting the world psyche. And as you said, how much of an impact, however a severe one at that, is Israel suffering the more it continues this genocidal war?
Yeah, so talking about the UN Security Council, when Islamic Republic of Iran, when the embassy in Damascus was attacked, they did not react. And then when Islamic Republic of Iran retaliated, Israel suddenly gave out statements, we have to have a meeting and all of that in the Security Council. This shows their double standards. And today, when we're talking about the issue of Palestine, the issue of oppression around the world, especially Palestine, that has been ongoing for decades, the international world will not close their eyes to the reality that is ongoing. If the UN Security Council wants to have their permission, have their position remain in the international world, if they want other countries to take them serious, they should take a stand against the false activities that are ongoing. They should take a stand against a effective stand, not just claiming that they're very worried about what's going on, like what they normally do. They should take a stand against the genocide that's going on.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. That's Mohammed Ali Araki, journalist and political analyst. Thank you so much. Moving on, more deaths and destruction have been reported as the Israeli regime keeps pounding the Gaza Strip with airstrikes and artillery. In the latest massacre, 8 Palestinians were killed in the city of Rafah, most of them children. Several other Palestinians were killed in Jabalia and in Nusayrat refugee camps. Many more have also been injured across the coastal territory. Since the start of the Israeli genocidal war in Gaza, over 34,000 Palestinians have been killed, mostly women and children. But casualty figures are likely much higher, with thousands buried under the rubble. On Saturday, the Palestinian Civil Defense said its crews recovered the bodies of 50 Palestinians buried by Israel in a mass grave inside the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis. Political commentator Anthony Hall says the ultimate goal of Israel's genocidal war is to eliminate the people of Gaza.
I found it very disgusting, really, that the report is that the United States, the Biden administration, gave Netanyahu sort of permission to do Rafah on the condition that he only do a limited attack on Iran. And this seems like a pretty cynical business. As far as the criminality of Netanyahu, he also has been subject to this International Court of Justice ruling these provisional measures, which he's completely ignored. So now he's also in contempt of the World Court, the court at the very top of the pyramid of international law. And it seems that the real objective is to eliminate the people of Gaza and the West Bank as much as possible, and to make life so that it's necessary for the people to sort of run for it if they get a chance. They're being starved. All of this attention on Israel and Iran has taken attention away from what's actually going on with the people in Gaza. There's no real major constituency in Israel that is saying, we need a ceasefire for everybody and for and the idea of eliminating Hamas, eradicating Hamas, this has always been sort of a cover, it seems to me, that the real agenda is to eliminate as many Palestinians as possible in Gaza and the West Bank, and who knows what's to come of the Palestinians who are citizens of Israel.
Israeli forces have shot dead two Palestinians in Beit Einun near the West Bank city of Al-Khalil. Israeli army has claimed that one of the Palestinians tried to stab a soldier and another opened fire at Israeli soldiers. Let's get more from our correspondent Mona Kandil, who joins us from occupied Ramallah. Mona, tell us what happened. Good morning.
The Israeli military declared this morning that two Palestinians arrived at the Beit Einun intersection. It's northeast Al-Khalil at the entrance of the Palestinian village of Beit Einun. One Palestinian had a gun. He opened fire at the Israeli soldiers there, and the other Palestinian had a knife, and he was running towards the Israeli forces to stab them. However, the Israeli troops at the scene immediately opened fire at the two Palestinians, and they neutralized them. This means that they opened fire, shot, and killed them. This is what the Israeli military is saying. The Israeli military is also saying that none of the Israeli forces had been wounded. The identity of those two Palestinians is still unknown. The Israeli forces have confiscated the body, and they themselves who informed the Palestinians that the two Palestinians who arrived at the Beit Einun intersection tried to stab and to open fire at Israeli soldiers to carry out an anti-Israeli operation. They were shot and killed. However, they did not reveal about their identity. We have to remind our viewers that today, Sunday, there's a general strike and a state of mourning has been declared here in the occupied West Bank to mourn the killing of at least 14 Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces in Tul Kerem, in Nur Shams refugee camp, an operation that lasted for almost 3 days since Thursday, and the Israeli forces, after midnight, they withdrew from Nur Shams and Tul Kerem city.
Thank you for that. We do appreciate it. Mona Kandil there from occupied Ramallah. Thank you. Moving on, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has carried out a fresh drone strike against Israeli positions in the occupied Syrian Golan Heights. The Iraqi movement says that it struck a vital target in the occupied Heights. It said the attack was in response to the massacres committed by the Israeli regime against Palestinian civilians, including women and children. The group said that it will continue its operations against Israeli targets. In recent months, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has conducted a series of attacks against Israeli positions. It has also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria, retaliation for Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas denies any plans to relocate its political headquarters out of Qatar. The statement, "The movement rejected a report by Wall Street Journal suggesting the movement is considering moving its current base in Qatar to another country in the region." Hamas said that such reports indicate U.S. press agencies are complicit in the Israel misleading propaganda. The movement also urged the Western media outlets to take news and information regarding the movement from its official sources. Qatari officials in the past also denied reports that Doha intended to close the Hamas office due to pressure from the U.S. Hamas' political headquarters was established in the Qatari capital Doha in 2012. Hamas political bureau chief Esmail Haniyeh has visited Turkey amid rumors of the group's leaders repositioning from Qatar. Haniyeh was warmly received by the Turkish president at his residence in the city of Istanbul, where the two officials discussed a host of issues, including the delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza. A correspondent, Roshan Saglam, has more.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and the lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
"Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas bureau and leaders as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice and for that Turkey will be the best option."
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Roshan Saglam, Istanbul.
Moscow slams the approval by the U.S. House of Representatives for an aid package to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. The Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman said the move will exacerbate global crises. Maria Zakharova called aid for Kiev direct support for terrorist activities and said that aid to Taiwan represented interference in China's internal affairs. In the case of Israel, she said that it will lead to worsening of the situation in West Asia. Meanwhile, the Kremlin said that U.S. aid for Kiev would further ruin the country and result in more deaths. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a $95 billion legislative package providing security assistance to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. 112 lawmakers, all Republicans, opposed the Ukraine aid, while 58 lawmakers voted against aid to Israel. The Senate will vote on the aid package next week. Spokesman for the Palestinian president has condemned the U.S. House approval of a bill providing $26 billion in military aid to Israel. Nabil Abu Rudena said the new aid means more Palestinian casualties in Gaza and in the occupied territories. He said the move is a dangerous escalation and a green light for Israel to expand the war to the region. The new bill would allow the regime to upgrade its missile systems, replenish its military equipment, and acquire advanced weapons. It would also prohibit sending funds to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency that is considered as the main source of assistance for Palestinians in Gaza. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful.
IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
The Limelight.
There were no calls by Western leaders for restraint as Israel bombed Gaza into ruins week after week, striking its hospitals, leveling its government offices, blowing up its universities, mosques and churches, and destroying its bakeries. Rather, President Biden has repeatedly rushed through emergency arms sales, bypassing Congress to make sure Israel has enough bombs to keep destroying Gaza and killing its children. Dear listeners, in this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Middle East, I wrote, there is a reason why the Zionist regime has been so ostentatious in its savaging of Gaza and its people. And it is the very same reason Israel felt emboldened to violate the diplomatic sanctity of Iran's consulate in Damascus. Because for decades, the child-killing regime of Israel has been guaranteed protection and assistance from the West, whatever crimes it commits. Israel's founders ethnically cleansed much of Palestine in 1948, far beyond the terms of partition set out by the UN a year earlier. It imposed a military occupation on the remnants of historic Palestine in 1967, driving out yet more of the native population. It then imposed a regime of apartheid on the few areas where Palestinians remained. In the West Bank reservations, Palestinians have been systematically brutalized, their homes demolished, and illegal Jewish settlements built on their land. The Palestinians' holy places have been gradually surrounded and taken from them. Separately, Gaza has been sealed off for 17 years, and its population denied freedom of movement, employment, and the basics of life. Israel's reign of terror to maintain its absolute control has meant imprisonment and torture are a rite of passage for most Palestinian men. Any protest is ruthlessly crushed. Now, Israel has added mass slaughter in Gaza, genocide, to its long list of crimes. The Zionist regime's displacements of Palestinians to neighboring states caused by its ethnic cleansing operations and slaughter have destabilized a wider region. And to secure its militarized settler colonial project in the West Asia region and its place as Washington's top dog client regime in the region, Israel has intimidated, bombed, and invaded its neighbors on a regular basis. Its attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus was just the latest of serial humiliations faced by Arab regimes. And through all of this, Washington and its vassal states have directed no more than occasional lip service calls for restraint towards Israel. There were never any consequences, but instead rewards from the West in the form of endless billions in aid and special trading status. So why, after decades of debauched violence from the Zionist regime, has the West suddenly become so interested in restraint? Because on this rare occasion it serves Western interests to calm the fires Israel is so determined to stoke. The Israeli regime strike on Iran's consulate came just as the Biden administration was finally running out of excuses for providing the weapons and diplomatic cover that has allowed the Zionist regime to slaughter, maim and orphan tens of thousands of Palestinian children in Gaza over 6 months. Demands for a ceasefire and arms embargo on the Zionist regime have been reaching fever pitch, with Biden hemorrhaging support among parts of his democratic base as he faces a rerun presidential election later this year against a resurgent rival, Donald Trump. A small numbers of votes could be the difference between victory and defeat. The Zionist regime had every reason to fear that its patron might soon pull the rug from under its campaign of mass slaughter in Gaza. But having destroyed the entire infrastructure needed to support life in the enclave, the Zionist regime needs time for the consequences to play out, either mass starvation there or a relocation of the population elsewhere on supposedly humanitarian grounds. A wider war centered on Iran would both distract from Gaza's desperate plight and force Biden to back Israel unconditionally to make good on his ironclad commitment to Israel's protection. And to top of it all, with the U.S. drawn directly into a war against Iran, Washington would have little choice but to assist the child-killing regime of Israel in its long campaign to destroy Iran's nuclear energy program, which is totally peaceful. That is why Biden officials are airing concerns to the U.S. media that Israel is ready to do something rash in an attempt to drag the administration into a wider war. The truth is, however, that Washington long ago cultivated Israel as its military Frankenstein monster. The Zionist regime's role was precisely to project U.S. power ruthlessly into the oil-rich West Asia region. The price Washington was more than willing to accept was Israel's eradication of the Palestinian people, replaced by a fortress Jewish state. Calling for the child-killing regime of Israel to exercise restraint now, as its entrenched lobbies flex their muscles meddling in Western politics, and self-confessed fascist rule Israel's government, is beyond parody. If the West really prized restraint, they should have insisted on it from the fabricated regime of Israel decades ago.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
The Israeli occupation and killings of journalists. Freedom of media in the Palestinian territories is still closely related and influenced by the Israeli occupation and settlers, and their continuous violations against Palestinian journalists and media institutions. Being a journalist, regardless of nationality, is a job that is full of dangers and obstacles. It is also the job of truth seekers. The Palestinian journalist is destined to live within the walls of these violations. But despite these hard conditions, he or she still has determination, boldness, persistence, and strength.
الواقع أن الصحفيين الفلسطينيين يعانون معاناة مزدوجة. The reality is that Palestinian journalists have a double suffering. On one hand, they are part of the Palestinian people who are subject to crimes and violations that qualify to genocide and war crimes. On the other hand, they have a dangerous job, especially in this hard environment under which Palestinians live because of the occupation. The Gaza Strip is besieged, while in the West Bank there is the apartheid wall, settlements, Judaization of Jerusalem, frequent violations and arrests. This affects the entire Palestinian society, and especially the journalists, as the occupation wants to black out the truth and their violations of human rights, as well as the state terrorism it practices. The Israeli occupation practiced all sorts of humiliation and subjugation methods on journalists. But along the years, the Palestinian journalist refused becoming a tool in the hands of the occupation and Israeli intelligence. And this made journalists sacrifice a lot. The Palestinian journalist plays a role as significant as that of the Palestinian politician or the fighter. To each his role. We have always seen the Palestinian journalist in the field. He would use his cameras and other tools to perform heroic and honorable achievements. He would always document and publicize the suffering of the Palestinian people, especially in the besieged Gaza Strip. He would always show the world the suffering, the incursions, the killing and torture Palestinians suffer on the hands of the Israeli occupation.
This boldness made the Israeli occupation army not differentiate between a journalist and another. So everyone is targeted and everyone is wanted.
Regardless of their nationality, journalists pursue finding the truth, removing injustice, and unveiling crimes of the occupation, no matter who that occupation may be. We have seen examples for that where reporters for networks in the United States and Europe expose crimes committed by the U.S. and other countries. An exception to this is the few journalists who are affiliated with their government, no matter who that government may be. Such journalists have a questionable credibility and are renounced in their communities. Journalists who come to Palestine are our colleagues and friends. We have to help them, and the Israeli occupation has to respect their freedom of movement and work, like it respects our freedom. But unfortunately, the Israeli occupation, as you know, does not respect any kind of freedom, and it continues its violations against these journalists. The Israeli occupation does not differentiate between a Palestinian and a non-Palestinian journalist. The non-Palestinian journalist tries to document the events as they are, so the Israeli occupation relentlessly targets them and any other journalist who tries to document events on the ground without discrimination. The Palestinian journalist works in an area rich with events. There are incursions and airstrikes all the time. And as a journalist tries to cover these crimes, he will be a target to the Israeli occupation. The Israeli occupation does not want the journalist to succeed in covering these violations, because any footage that comes out of the Gaza Strip exposes the Israeli occupation's army. That is why, in the beginning of any incursion, they fire and attack journalists to get them away from the action zone so they cannot document these incursions or any targeting of civilians. Therefore, if they injure the journalist, he would be taken to the hospital and there will be no one to document the events, so the occupation army can do whatever they want. If journalists were there, this means there were witnesses on the crime. There are no witnesses on the crime as long as there are no journalists. Palestinian journalists have been subject to a variety of violations that reach the killing in cold blood. Other violations include arrest and detention for extended periods, especially the administrative detention with no accusation, as well as confiscation of their media coverage badges, especially in the West Bank. Journalists face continuous violations similar to the case during their coverage of the war on Gaza or the usual occupations incursions to the Palestinian areas. Many of them were injured while covering the events, and some of these injured journalists lost their ability to perform their job.
Assassination of journalists in general is part of the repulsive occupation, because Palestinian journalists actually like the job, which unveils the ugly face of the occupation, and have determination and persistence. The Israeli occupation just assassinates them. They kill them to kill the truth. This is how the occupation envisions killing and assassinating them.
During the attack on Jabalia, there was an incursion in Azbat Abu Drabbu right behind us. We were covering the incursion on the first and second day. It seems that the Israeli occupation army did not like our movement in the area, so they fired at us multiple times, but we continued documenting this crime. I was standing right here when the tanks advanced a little further. They saw me, and right away one of the tanks fired a shell directly towards me. After I was taken to the hospital, I was surprised that the shell also hit other people and they were killed. When I woke up and became conscious, I realized that my best friend and the rest of the team were also injured. After that, we went back to the field and continued working. These violations and targeting of journalists are not going to stop us from doing our work. By the way, this building we are in right now was hit and targeted by the Israeli occupation during the war on the Gaza Strip. Other colleagues were on the roof of this building and were targeted as well while covering the events. However, none of us, the journalists, our colleagues who were targeted, their families, or even the Palestinian Authority took judicial action. So there is weakness or failure in this side. We have to encourage families of victims, civil society organizations, the journalist syndicate, and the Palestinian Authority to take judiciary action against the Israeli occupation's war criminals. These Israeli war criminals should not remain unpunished.
We can generally say that these violations frequently committed by the Israeli occupation against Palestinian journalists are evidence that it tries to cover the truth and isolate Palestine from its surrounding. The occupation isolated the Gaza Strip through the siege and isolates the West Bank from time to time. Despite all these hardships, Palestinian journalists played their role in delivering the message and suffering of Palestinian people, as well as documenting the violations that exposed the Israeli occupation. Therefore, the camera was able to expose the organized terrorism, war crimes, and crimes against humanity committed by the Israeli occupation.
Claims were filed on the issue of targeting journalists, especially those from Al-Aqsa Association, but procrastination has always prevailed in these cases. There were also claims by local and international organizations, but these also were put aside, especially the ones regarding Al-Aqsa Association. The justification given most of the time, among others, was that a counterclaim of the one presented is filed. This is evidence that there are restrictions on journalists and their claims, especially those from Al-Aqsa Association. The Israeli occupation is a renegade state practicing state terrorism according to the international humanitarian law.
However, the balance of powers with the United States hegemony blocks any attempts to sue the Israeli occupation in the United Nations, especially in the Security Council. Using Article 7 of the international law would force the Israeli occupation to subdue and abide to the international conventions and the international humanitarian law. When the issue on the table concerns an Arab country or so, the United Nations decisions are enforced immediately, and forces like UNIFIL would deploy to employ decisions of the Security Council. In the Palestinian case, everything is pending and no serious sanctions were enforced to prevent the Israeli occupation from committing more crimes against Palestinians, and this provides a shield for the occupation to carry on.
Israeli occupation's violations presented a dangerous threat to the lives of many journalists while performing their job, as they were targeted with bullets, tear gas, and stun grenades, and many of them were critically injured. During the war in 2009, the Israeli occupation targeted journalists and media facilities. One of the most important media companies targeted is the Media Group Company, which was directly targeted with a rocket.
Many of the journalists in Media Group Company were targeted on various occasions. One of our cameramen was targeted with a tank shell, and he almost got killed. During our coverage of the war on Gaza, end of 2008 and early 2009, the media group office was shelled. We were supplying coverage for 20 satellite channels and international news agencies. The place was shelled despite the lighting and the clear signs in Arabic, English, and Hebrew that there are journalists in this place. The Israeli occupation's shell, a rocket, fell only 8 meters away from us, thanks to Allah. Otherwise, we would have been all dead. At some point after the rocket hit the office, I did not feel any kind of pain. I started to wake up and look around the place. Everything was black, and I didn't know what happened to us and whether both the 13th and 14th floor were hit. Then little by little, we started to check on each other, and I turned out to be injured in my arm only, which is a relief. Then we found out that Ayman was hit in the head, so we tried to stop his bleeding and could barely carry him down the stairs from the 13th floor, and then put him in a car and took him to the hospital.
The Israeli occupation had not had enough terrifying and scaring civilians, but it continued the unjustified targeting of the media offices and facilities. Al-Aqsa TV channel, affiliated with Hamas, was directly targeted with rockets, which made it stop its transmission, and this makes the violation reach the level of killing through both bullets and rockets.
Both Al-Aqsa TV channel and Al-Aqsa satellite channel were targeted. Al-Aqsa satellite channel was hit with an F-16 airstrike in the first hours of the war, and half an hour later, the TV channel was targeted. 3 floors of the 4-story building were totally destroyed. There was nobody in the building at that moment, but all the equipment and devices were destroyed in this sudden strike. There was a new fully equipped studio we were about to commence, but it was also destroyed. As soon as the war started, we evacuated the building and moved to another place where the satellite transmission vehicle parked there was also targeted. We used other alternatives to continue working. But this was very exhausting to our crews. Our colleague, Fadl Shana'a, was killed by the Israeli occupation tank shells while he was holding his camera and trying to document war crimes committed against Palestinian victims. This direct targeting of journalists continues, and it is the most dangerous type of violations that the occupation practices. Other violations include prevention from traveling and restricting freedom of movement. There are plenty of examples on that, like Abdul Latif Ghaith, one of the founders of the Journalist Syndicate, who has been prevented from leaving Jerusalem for years. Journalists suffer from other violations on a daily basis while covering events in the field.
The Israeli occupation committed various violations against Palestinian journalists and reporters, as some of them were prevented from coverage, traveling, and participation. The Israeli occupation is continuing these outrageous and inhumane practices.
The Israeli occupation uses various methods to target and humiliate Palestinian journalists, like banning coverage, breaking into their offices, harassing them on checkpoints, not permitting part of the crew to pass, and preventing coverage inside Al-Aqsa Mosque. In 2010 and 2011, all equipment and part of the footage were confiscated at the gates of Al-Aqsa Mosque multiple times. Footage and filled materials were also confiscated from the journalists covering the protests in Belaim and other demonstrations against the apartheid wall and others. All the equipment and materials, like footage and films, were confiscated in all these events. The Israeli occupation tried everything with Palestinian journalists, from killing, targeting, and humiliation, but they could never break their determination and persistence. Otherwise, you would have seen Palestinian journalists run away and sit at home during the Israeli occupation's war on the Gaza Strip. But on the contrary, they have always been in the field, and their numbers are increasing. This shows that Palestinian journalists are ready to sacrifice for this just cause and to make the world see the truth. Everyone is a target, despite the immunity and protection provided for journalists by both the international humanitarian law and the Fourth Geneva Convention. There are two forms of protection. The first is that journalists are civilians and are entitled to all rights of civilians. The other form of protection is that provided by the Fourth Geneva Convention for journalists, women, and children under occupation or in armed conflict zones. Despite all that, we find that the Israeli occupation does not respect the international humanitarian law, with the hideous help and bias of the United States and the silence that qualifies to a crime. All this encourages the Israeli occupation to carry on with its violations and not respect the minimum level of humanitarian principles and the international humanitarian law.
In the past 10 years, the Israeli occupation killed about 20 journalists, in addition to committing hundreds of physical and vocal violations and continuing hindering journalists and reporters from performing their jobs. In the last 3 years, between 2009 and 2011, the Israeli occupation committed 336 violations against journalists and media institutions and killed four journalists in early 2009 during the war.
Why does not the Israeli occupation target Israeli journalists who cover internal events and issues? Why are other journalists covering events in Europe or the United States not targeted? Palestinian journalists are the only ones to be targeted. and the United States is silent about it and provides cover for the occupation from being legally punished. I believe that what stopped the war on Gaza was the Palestinian journalist, not politicians or political negotiations. Journalists played a significant role in documenting and reporting the events. They were subject to a lot of pressure. Many of them were killed, their equipment was destroyed, and their offices were targeted. But they stood tall above all that and performed a significant job reporting the reality of the events and the suffering of their people to the whole world.
Despite this horrific amount of violations of the different international conventions, the international community did not react to these violations and did not hold the Israeli occupation accountable for these crimes and killings of journalists. This silence encouraged the occupation to continue their violations to prevent journalists and reporters from covering and documenting the various crimes committed against Palestinians.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Zain. Sayyid Zain, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For today's episode of the program Viewpoints, we want to talk about the negative effects of the cyberspace, also known as the virtual world, on the family and the foundation of the family, relation between family members. Before getting to the effects, whether they are positive or negative, mostly I believe negative, let's be a little bit concerned with the definition of cyberspace itself. What is it exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you rightly termed it as virtual world, you know, though it is termed as virtual world, but in reality nowadays it is the real world. I mean the people are busy with this cyberspace more than being a non-cyberspace kind of world, you know. So that is why even nowadays we cannot term it as virtual, but we can term it as a kind of real or real external kind of world that we are in. Anyhow, so of course our brothers and sisters already know what is the cyberspace. Sometimes something is that simple that even cannot be defined.
Okay.
And philosophy says that wujud or existence is something that is very much evident to the extent that no one can define it. Nowadays, I think this cyberspace is also like that. But anyhow, of course, being in virtual world via, let's say, internet mostly, or media, for example.
Social media networks.
Yes. Being busy with these sort of things, it means that you are much more, let's say, in contact with this kind of virtual world. This is what we mean by cyberspace.
That's all right. And most of these video clips, audio ones, the podcast, video cast, the footage, you know, and the content is basically which are fed into the cyberspace or virtual world are taken from the real lives of the people. So can we call it a kind of virtual world, Sayyid?
So it is virtual in the sense that, when we go there, we're not ourselves. But it cannot be disconnected from the real world.
Yes.
Nothing can be disconnected from it. So there's aspects of that, you know, different things, videos and things that are put there, put from the real world. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't give you a complete, very good idea of the real world. Right, that if somebody was to look at the virtual world, that they won't be able to get a good idea of what real world is like, and that plays a very important role in families, especially, and in the well-being of a person as well. That if somebody is very much into the virtual world, they start thinking that, oh, you know, because when we post things online, usually it's the positive things that we post. People, they you know, seldom post that, you know, something bad happened to them. And when somebody goes online and looks at, you know, other people's and their lives based on social media, Facebook, uh-huh. these kind of things, they see only positives. And they think to themselves that, oh, you know, how come I'm the only one who has negative things in my life?
Yes.
How come, you know, like, I'm the only kind of person who is in this state that, and everyone else seems to be happy. They're smiling always. They're always, you know, with their spouses, everything is happy. They're going on, you know, this vacation, that thing. And I am, you know, not able to even afford anything. Mm-hmm. I don't have a good, you know, that good of a relation with my family members. And so this brings discontentment
okay.
with, you know, our own family, with our own lives.
Yes.
And we look at ourselves and we're just not happy in the state that we are mm-hmm. in.
That's right. Right.
And that has a negative effect on our own selves, okay. our health, and our family relations yes. as well.
Okay, that's right. But Sheikh Rouhani, does it have only negative effects on the lives of the people? I mean, there is no positive effects of the social media or, for example, the cyberspace on the lives of the people? At least, for example, in one of the examples, it was the Israeli attacks on Gaza, you know. I think it made lots of enlightenment among the people in the world. I mean, the footage of the poorness of the people, the hunger and thirst over there, you know, awakening the fitrah of so many of the people who were not even Muslims all across the world. Can you name it as a positive effect of cyberspace or the virtual world or not?
You know, it depends, I think. You know, historically talking, for example, when we had industrial revolution in the history of particularly Europe, when the European countries became so powerful in terms of warfares, so then we had two world wars, the first and the second. Millions of people were the victims of these industrial development in the West. Always these kind of revolutions in the history, they had their own victims. Generations were the victims of these kind of developments.
Okay.
That is why this cyberspace, it would have, of course, their victims
mm-hmm.
in the history. But then later, as the superpowers finally, they came to this conclusion that they should have a kind of agreement not to continue this killing, massacring each other. You know, finally, they come to this kind of intellectuality.
Yes.
It seems that finally this cyberspace, of course, it would take its victims, unfortunately, from many generations. As we see nowadays, most of the youth, most of the youngsters, unfortunately, they waste